So the title that I would propose to you for today's homily would simply be this: You can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. You can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. And we'll see how that kind of pans out here toward the end. This particular gospel begins where Jesus warns against one of the most fundamental human sinful drives, and it's called greed. Greed. And what is greed? To go back to the old scholastic tradition, it is the inordinate desire for more than I need. But to put it maybe a little bit more practically and personally, greed is the insatiable desire for more. The insatiable desire for more, 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 and I get more, and I still want more, and I have even still more, and I still want more, and on it goes. It is, we're never satisfied. We have never uttered the word enough. And that's fundamentally where greed comes. It's a deep wound in our heart. It's rooted in fear, this need to acquire because I don't trust I'll have enough for tomorrow, but it's also simply rooted in just its own sinful drive. Never enough, more and more. It is said for those of us who struggle with weight that what happens is we eat a big meal, and instead of saying, wow, that was a lot, the stomach just stretches. And you need more to fill it the next time, see? The same is true for those who have addictions. And here I speak not of just a common way of speaking of addiction, but the clinical way, because at the heart of addiction is needing more and more of the thing, the substance, to create the desired effect. So maybe a person's feeling a little nervous or sad, and a glass of wine kind of calms their heart. But something starts to set up in the body so that one glass the body doesn't pay any attention to. Now you need two. And then the whole bottle, and then two bottles. And sadly, that's the nature of addiction. Needing more and more of the thing, and it's never, never enough. We'll see some of these things come up in some of the texts that we're going to look at today, but let me give you this particular text that kind of describes greed in a biblical way. It's from 1 Timothy in the 6th chapter, and it says this: We brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we should be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into a temptation, into a trap, into many senseless and hurtful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all evils. And it is through this craving for more that some have wandered away from the faith and have pierced their hearts with many pangs. I think we all have a sense of that. You know, we live in a very affluent culture. And more, the more we get, the more we tend to kind of lose our way. The more affluent we've become, the emptier our churches. The more affluent we have become, the emptier our homes, the smaller our families, the less time we spend even raising our own children. Wealth and the riches of this world have a way of causing us to stray, to get lost very quickly in what is passing and what really at the end of the day are trinkets. We're fascinated with trinkets, but the deeper, better things of life, like family, like love of God, love of neighbor, love of my children and grandchildren, and really cultivating the deep relationships that nourish us, starting with God, we're too busy. We're running. We're all anxious and worried about many things. And so that's what Paul is describing. It says again, those who desire to be rich, and let's be clear, that's all of us. This is not just something that rich people have. This is a human problem. And all of us struggle with it to some degree or another. Those who desire to be rich, and don't battle it, in other words, fall into temptation and into a snare, into many senseless and hurtful desires. And we see that everywhere in our culture today. Senseless and hurtful desires that destroy people's lives, and still they want more. And that's what greed does. It's the insatiable desire for more. And so the Lord cautions us today. He says, be careful of greed in all of its forms. Be careful. Be careful of it. And then he goes on to tell this parable, which gives us some instructions about wealth. Because listen, of itself, money and wealth is not evil. If it were, we couldn't take up a collection today. Right? And you couldn't go earn a living, and so on. There is a need that we all have to earn, to acquire some degree of wealth and a way in this world. So we have to find a way. And so the Lord gives us, if you will, some instructions, some reminders about wealth. The parable begins with what we might call the initiation of wealth. It says here, there was a rich man whose land produced a bountiful harvest. Did you hear the way that sentence is worded? It doesn't say he produced, it says the land. The land is the subject of the sentence. It's the land that produces a bountiful harvest. Brothers and sisters, do not forget that. Do not forget. We should work hard in our life, and we should be able to benefit from the fruits of our labor. And hard work does have its payoffs. But at the end of the day, don't you ever forget that whatever you have came from God. And it didn't just come from God, but it often came to you through tens of thousands of others. The increase or the initiation of wealth is always, it all belongs to God, it comes from God, and it usually comes through the goodness, the generosity, and the work of others as well. You don't have anything you have all by yourself. You didn't get it by yourself. You didn't make it all by yourself. It all came from God, and not only that, it came to you usually through 10,000 other people. Let me give you an example. I wrote an article on my blog last week. Just go over to Safeway, not right now, and pick up a can of peas and start thinking. A simple thing, a can of peas, $2.50 maybe. Those are expensive peas, Father. All right, $1.75. Just start to think of all that stands behind that, starting with God, who gave the land and gave the increase. But work backwards with me. Think about that can you're holding. And think about men and people who went down into mines to pull out the ore. So that then is then smelted and made into tin and aluminum and the different ingredients of that can. Think of their hard labor. Think of the difficulty of going deep into the earth. Think of all the work it took to pull that iron ore out. Think of the big trucks that pull it away and bring it to place. Think, who invented those trucks? Who paved those roads? You see, you didn't. I didn't. Thousands of people are already lining up behind this can of peas, and we're just looking at the can. Again, men went into mines, people built trucks, invented trucks, put those parts together, paved the roads, and brought it to this great plant, and all of the technology of smelting and all the things that we've done to refine metals all through the generation, and the hard work that took place at that plant, and the electricity that and other things that fire up that plant, the gas, the coal that brings the electricity to alive, and then brings the electricity to the plant, and those men who went down into those mines to mine the coal, and on. And that's just a can. And then finally, you take it to the cannery, and they make the can, and everything that it takes, all the people who were part of that process, and all the roads that bring the cans back and forth, and who paved those roads, who put up the electricity to keep that plant going, and on, I keep going. And then the peas themselves. Think of going back into history, horticulture and agriculture, and all the people who have been part of making the capacity of this planet to bear an abundant harvest by God's grace. Think of all of them, and then think of the farmer. Think of the those who go out into the fields, many of them immigrants who do the hard, backbreaking work of harvesting and bringing products to market for us. Think of those people. And think again of all the roads and all the power and everything that's required to fire up the plants, to bring those peas and put them in a can and send them off to you and to me. Again, trucks over roads that we didn't pave. It finally gets to a warehouse somewhere here, maybe over rails that somebody else laid and over those big, huge rail cars that are filled with product that somebody else filled. You and I didn't do it. And it comes to the warehouse over there at wherever Safeway Warehouse in Landover. And people are working there and on and on. And finally, it comes to Safeway, where good men and women are working hard, keeping the shelves stocked. And there you are, and there I am, holding a can of peas. Are you worn out? I'm worn out just describing it. Brethren, even a simple thing like a can of peas, you got to remember what you're holding. You say, what's mine? I can get it with my own money. No, you can't. See, you depended, first of all, on God, and second of all, on literally tens of thousands of other people who stand behind that simple can of peas, and that's just a can of peas. Now, that's what the Lord is getting at here when he says this. There was a rich man whose land produced a bountiful harvest. Look what I did. You might have done something, but there are an awful lot of other things in the ingredient, and you better darn well remember that and learn to be grateful that whatever you have, whatever I have, comes to us from God. And so often, through hard work of other people. Are you grateful? You see? Now, and let me give you some other biblical quotes just to show you again that the Lord wants to remind us that whatever we have really came from him and through others. Here's a quote from the book of Deuteronomy in the 8th chapter. Remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce whatever wealth you have. Remember the Lord. Likewise, Psalm 24 says, the earth belongs to the Lord and all of its fullness thereof, the world and all those who dwell therein. And so whatever you have belongs to God and came to you from him and through others. And likewise, the book of James, every good and perfect gift comes from above, from the Father of lights. Or St. Paul says this in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, what have you that you have not received? And if you have received, why do you glory as if you had achieved? Well, I got it. It's my own money. I worked hard for it. I know you did. So did 10,000 other people. And so did the Lord who gave it to you. You see. Now, this is an important instruction on wealth. It's the first instruction. It's probably the most important. Because what I call my own, first of all, belongs to God, and secondly, came from him. God and God alone, the old song says, created all these things we call our own. From the mighty to the small, the glory in them all is God's and God's alone. And he gave it to us, but through others. Never forget how grateful you should be for everything you call your own. Everything you say you bought. God gave you the money to buy it with. God gave you the ability to get the money to buy it with. And God gave you whatever you're holding. And he gave it to you very often through the back-breaking efforts of others. So, the first instruction on wealth, the initiation of wealth. There was a man whose land produced a bountiful harvest. Next comes what we might call the inconvenience of wealth. The man says, man, I'm overwhelmed. What can I do? I know. I don't have. What can I do? I don't have enough space to put all this stuff. Sound familiar? You know? And the man is burdened by his wealth because he doesn't even think of generosity, of giving it away as an option. What shall I do? He asks anxiously. But to be honest, great wealth doesn't usually bring us comfort. It does bring some comfort to us. But brothers and sisters, it can't bring us happiness. Wealth brings comfort, but not happiness. Because it's not about what you and I really need. You and I were made for God, to know Him, to love Him, and serve Him, and to be happy with Him one day forever in heaven. What, I don't care how much money or stuff you and I get in this world, it cannot scratch where we really itch. It simply cannot fill the God-sized hole in our heart. But we keep accumulating it, thinking it will, and then it starts to burden us. Because if you look at, whatever ups and downs our economy has from year to year, the bottom line is, brothers and sisters, we live in the most affluent country, perhaps in the entire world, and we live perhaps in the most affluent time, where the creature comforts that we can have are kings and queens wouldn't even dream of some of the stuff we just have at the flip of a switch. Are you praying with me? And yet, are we not burdened? Are we not weighed down? If you ask the average person, how are you doing? Oh, I'm joyful, I'm enjoying all this wealth, it's just so wonderful. That's not, people don't answer, oh, I'm tired, I'm worn out, I'm anxious. The key word is busy. And you remember, that's really an acronym, right? Being under Satan's yoke, right? You know that. All of our wealth brings us a lot of anxiety, a lot of fears. Bishop Barron, who's one of the Catholic bishops that many of you probably heard of, he points out that in his hometown of Chicago, and it's my hometown as well, where I was born, the three tallest buildings in Chicago are all insurance companies. He says, if you want to really learn about a culture, look at its buildings, and look at the ones that are the most prominent. You go back to the Middle Ages, the most prominent building in the town was the church. It was at the center, there was a steeple, it was the tallest building. Go a little bit forward a few hundred years and into the Renaissance, and it was government buildings and the buildings of wealthy people, see? Go much further forward into history. You go back to the 1950s, the big industry buildings like Standard Oil. Those were the big buildings in Chicago when I was growing up. But now they're all insurance companies. The three tallest buildings are insurance companies. It tells us what looms largest for us: anxieties, fears, concerns that we might lose everything. You see? So there's a kind of an inconvenience that wealth brings. Let me read you some scriptures just to, again, kind of bring it to clarity. Book of Ecclesiastes in the 5th chapter that we read from today. The rest of a laborer is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of a rich man permits him no sleep. Tossing and turning, you see. Or again, from Proverbs in the 15th chapter, better a little with holy fear of the Lord than great treasure and all the trouble with it. Or again, Proverbs 17, better a dry crust of bread with peace in my household than a house full of feasting but with strife. By the way, what that's getting at is, you've heard the old expression, where there's a will, there's a... Mm-mm-mm. Where there's a will, there's a relative. Right? You see, that's what got this gospel started, right? Tell my brother to share the inheritance, all right? Yeah. There's a lot of trouble that comes with wealth. A lot of people want in on it, and a lot of people don't want to let go of it, and there's a lot of strife. Like Ecclesiastes chapter 5 also says this, and this is really at the heart of it. Whoever loves money never has enough. And whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This is vanity. Now, this word vanity that occurs all throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, we think of vanity as, you know, spending too much time in the mirror and wondering about our appearance. But vanity really at the heart of it means emptiness. To be vain is to be empty. Vanitas in the Latin comes from the word that means empty, empty. And so again, so much of what we put all the value in, money and power and prestige and what people think, is just empty at the end. It just cannot do it. It burdens us, but it really doesn't bless us that much. It can give us some comfort, but not happiness. Because that's not why we were made. We were made to know the Lord. He says, I made you for myself. I've written my name in your heart. Your heart is saying, seek the face of the Lord. Seek always the face of the Lord. That's what your heart's really saying. But you say, no, just another glass of wine, that'll be fine. Or just a new car, or just a bigger house, or just is always going to be something more because it's not the answer. And it adds to everything else, the inconvenience, the inconvenience. And so we see not only the, as I say, the initiation of wealth, which comes from God, and very often through others, for which we should be grateful, but there's an inconvenience to wealth. And there's the illusion of wealth. He says, you know, if I just tear down barns and I put up bigger things and I store it all up, I'll be happy and I'll be able to say, rest, eat. And we've already said, that's just not true. It's an illusion. And since I've already covered it, let me move on. But you see the vision again, you see? The vision. That wealth creates an illusion of happiness, but it only lasts about 20 minutes max. And then you need something more. You need the upgrade or you need something else. Again, I could give you many scriptures, but I'll move on because I think we've already covered this idea that wealth is not only inconvenient, but it's very illusory. It promises what it really cannot deliver because you have something in your heart that it cannot fill. Only God can fill that place. And that leads then to the insufficiency of wealth. He thinks that he's got his life all set. And the Lord warns, a man's life does not consist in possessions. A man's life, in other words, consists in finding God, getting to know the Lord, becoming more and more filled and nourished on the things of God, which includes family, which includes love of others, and our life becomes rich and full on the things that we're really made for, which is relationship with God and relationship with each other. Now, there's this incredible insufficiency because as you fool this very night, your life's going to be required of you. And all the good things you've got, where are they going? They ain't going with you. You cannot take it with you. You cannot take it with you. Wealth is insufficient. It won't buy you out of death. It won't, at the end, will not add one more day to your life. God has set your days. And one day you and I will leave this world and everything we've acquired in it. Total loss department, okay? Are you ready there? Total loss department. All the insurance ain't going to come with you. I'll tell you a funny little story. There was a man who married a young woman, and she only married him because he had a lot of money. She didn't really love him. And he sort of knew that. But their marriage, of course, got very bitter very quickly. And he said, you're not going to have a dime when I die. I want you to put all the money in the coffin with me and bury me with it. And he told all the friends, and he told lawyers, he told everybody, this is what I'm demanding. This is what she's required to do by law. So he did die. And at the wake, everyone went to the coffin and looked in. And the lawyer went and said, I don't see that you fulfilled the request. He said, oh, I did. Look at that little piece of paper in his hand. What do you mean? He said, I put all the money in my bank account, and I wrote him a check. You can't take it with you. So, we see the insufficiency of wealth. But here then finally comes, this is what I've really been heading for, the instruction on wealth. Here's what the Lord says. All these negative outcomes that we've been talking about are what happens for those who store up treasure for themselves, but are not rich in what matters to God. Now, what matters to God? Well, I've already said a lot of it, but let's just do some quick repeating and then focus on one particular thing, because this is a gospel about greed. What matters to God is that you and I come to know him and love him, and that he'd be able to shower his love upon you and fill that gap in your heart. And he's waiting for you and me to open the door. That matters to God, that you answer, and that he come and establish a relationship with you, and then help you to love your neighbor as yourself. And that includes everything from living chastely to forgiving trespasses that are committed against you, to being forgiving and kind and merciful, to being generous, living chastely, living with faithfulness and fidelity, making commitments and keeping them because you love people, you care about them, and you don't want to hurt them. Those things matter to God. And it all comes down to a word called relationship. But there then comes also then a particular focus that we should have today, since this is about income and wealth. What matters to God is that you and I go back to remembering that everything we have, we've received from God through the backbreaking efforts of other people, and that we never forget the gratitude and the duty we have to return our excess wealth to the good of others. Now, let me tell you a thing that many people are surprised to hear. The social justice teachings of the Catholic Church are treated in the Catechism in a place that most people don't expect initially, under the seventh commandment. The seventh commandment, what is that? Thou shalt not steal. Well, I didn't steal anything. I got it okay. I earned it. Well, pay attention, though. The Catechism treats of our need to take care of the poor under the seventh commandment. You shall not steal. I didn't steal anything from any poor person. I certainly didn't do that, Father. On we go to the next topic. Nope, stop. Wait a minute. God teaches us all throughout both Jewish and Christian tradition to never forget that if I have excess, if I have, to put it in the words of St. Martin of Tours, if I have two coats, one of them belongs to the poor. Notice it belongs to the poor. Now you say, well, Father, I need more than two coats. I gotta have a jacket, I gotta have a long coat, I gotta have a red coat, I have a blue coat. You get the point, right? If you have things that are in excess, it belongs to somebody else. Now, that offends against many modern notions, but it's a very constant tradition in both the Christian churches and all the way back into Judaism. In the Catechism, it's put this way. There's something called the universal destination of goods, which basically translated means this, that God gave all the good things of this world for all the people of this world to enjoy. God gave all the good things of this world for all the people of this world. And therefore, if we start to hoard and keep more than we need consistently, we are holding on to something that doesn't belong to us anymore. It belongs to someone else who needs it more. Now, I hear all the gears turning. We're going to get to the specifics in a minute, but listen to the principle. Now, St. Gregory the Great, one of the great popes of the early church, always put it this way. He said, when I give from my excess to the poor, I do not do that merely as an act of charity, though charity can perfect it. I do so as an act of justice. I give to the poor not because of my charity, but because of justice, because what I have really belongs to him. And if I do not give it to him, I am guilty of theft. And that's the long-standing Christian tradition. If I have two coats, one of them belongs to the poor. We do not render to the poor simply because we're nice and kind and charitable, although that's a beautiful thing. But we also render to the poor because we owe it to them. We owe it to them. Now, again, the Catechism hastens to point out, because of sin and because of troubles in this world, private ownership is still an important thing that is permitted. But remember, ownership is in quotes, because you don't own anything. It all belongs to God. Whatever that money you got is tainted money. It ain't yours. It's all God's, okay? And God expects us, even though he puts it in our hands, he expects us to use it in a way that is pleasing to him, the owner. And let me tell you something. Bible quote after Bible quote, going all the way back to page one, God cares a lot about the poor and whether we take care of them or not. It's going to be a huge part of our judgment. So we are obliged to care for the poor. It's not just something nice to do if you have a little extra time or money. Now, these things shock us, but they're part of our tradition. Now, this does not mean that you should just willy-nilly go and throw everything away, and you have to come up with a number of what you really need and everything else you have to give away in just some kind of a reckless fashion. First of all, let's begin with a couple of other principles. Charity begins at home, but it does not end there. But it does begin there. So sometimes the first group that's most needy that you know are your own children and maybe grandchildren. And they're going to need some care, maybe a college education. You have every obligation to store up and take care of them. Charity does begin at home, but it does not end there. And so from other excesses, we have to reach out to good, worthy causes or to people that we know or to situations and become part of rendering back to them what is more than I need. And this is one of the problems in our culture. Greed is one of the under-confessed sins in our culture. Almost nobody ever says, man, I got more than I need. We just don't come to that conclusion because we're not encouraged to. I mean, you only live in a 1,500 square foot house, man. How can you do that, man? You need a 3,500 square foot house. You need a great room. You need granite countertops. And we're hit with that stuff all day long. You don't necessarily need granite countertops. You don't necessarily need 3,500 square feet. You don't necessarily need plasma screen TVs in every other room. But we're told we do, and we buy into it so quickly. And the next thing you know, we're in debt, and we're trying to pay off the cards, and oh gosh, headache after headache, right? When do we ever come to a point when we say, I have enough? Not in our culture. We just don't. And we've got to start. All of us. Now, I didn't tell you never to have granite countertops or not. There may be a need for you to have a larger home, and there are some questions of investment. I'm not here to micromanage your finances, and neither is God. The principle, though, still has to apply. What do I have that is excessive? I need to learn how to live more simply and begin to trim down so that I can render my debt to the poor. Because we do have things that we owe them. I do have more than two coats. Whatever the equivalent is for you, there are some things that I need to learn to give back. And that's the first teaching. This matters to God. Now, God also says, though, and God wants to give us some good advice. Let me give you another instruction on wealth, a couple of them from Scripture that the Scriptures teach us. So the Lord says this in Luke chapter 16. He says, look, use your worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself, so that when it's gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. You say, what's that all about? That's where we're coming to. You can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. That is to say, you and I can learn how to store up treasure for ourselves in heaven and to store up something for the day of judgment. What this text is getting at, use your worldly wealth to gain friends. Who are those friends? It's the poor. It's the poor. Cardinal George, who died about 3 years ago, was always famous for saying, in this life, the poor need us. But at the day of judgment, we are going to need them. And it says here, the text says, I tell you, use this worldly wealth to gain friends, namely the poor, so that when it is gone, they will welcome you into eternal dwellings. Who? The poor. I don't know about you, but I'm going to need some grace and mercy on the day of judgment. Or is it just me? But isn't it nice to know that if you've been generous to the poor will stand with you on the day of your judgment and say, Lord, this one was good to us. Let him in. And the Lord said, really? That's a pretty good testimony. It matters to the Lord. One of the great judgment scenes, the Lord says, when I was hungry, you gave me to drink, or to eat. When I was thirsty, you gave me to drink. And on it goes. When I was hungry, I needed shelter. You cared for me. Now come. Inherit the kingdom prepared for you. See? The Lord, this matters to God, being rich in what matters to God. And so the text, Jesus gives us just some good, solid advice, good investment advice. Invest some of your wealth in the poor, and that's a way of storing up treasure for yourself in heaven. It'll be waiting for you there. And what is that treasure? It's the poor who will welcome you and say, thank you. Thank you. You rendered your debt. You cared for us. Now welcome into eternal dwellings. You see? And that's good advice from the Lord, an instruction on wealth. Likewise, this instruction from 1 Timothy chapter 6. Paul writes, command those who are wealthy in this present world not to be arrogant or to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain anyway, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides everything for our enjoyment. And then it goes on to say, command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will store up for themselves treasure as a firm foundation for the coming judgment day and the age, so that they may lay hold of what is truly life. Do you hear? That's good advice. Befriend the poor, help the poor. They're powerful intercessors. See? Now again, I realize that all the gears are turning. Does that mean that you just recklessly throw money out? No. Be careful. Not every cause is worthy. Not everyone is as poor as they present themselves. We have to do some discerning and be prudent. But at the end of the day, it still remains. The Lord wants to instruct us today on wealth, and he wants to remind us. First of all, he wants to remind us that there's an initiation of wealth. All of our wealth comes from him, more often than not, through others. Secondly, that wealth has inconveniences associated with it, illusions associated with it, and at the end of the day, it's insufficient. So therefore, here comes the instruction. Use your wealth to build relationships with your family, with the poor, and with others who can speak for you on the day of your judgment. Be smart. Use your money wisely. More things aren't going to help you. They may even turn to condemn you. But being generous, you're going to have to decide what's your excess wealth. But I'm going to tell you right now, a lot of us got a lot of stuff we think we need. It's just stuff we really just want. Let the Lord show you some ways, as I need to do as well, that we can kind of trim down and have more income available to help others in things that really matter. Not just a bigger house for myself or a granite countertop, but something richer, something better. You see, you can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. And there's a great camp meeting in the Promised Land, y'all. A great camp meeting waiting for us of joy. And that's what we should be investing in, not this world. I'm not here to micromanage your finances, but I'm here to give you these principles, as the Lord is. Again, God, and God alone, created all these things we call our own. From the mighty to the strong, the glory in them all is God's, and God's alone. And God alone will be the joy of our eternal home. He will be our one desire, and our hearts will never tire of God and God alone. At the end of the day, whatever wealth we have belongs to him, came from him, and needs to go back to him in a way that he will say, "Well done, good and faithful servant, well done." Amen.